From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, welcome to, it's Monday. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. And man, was that a lackluster Super Bowl or what? It certainly did not live up to the hype, folks. 43-8? Really? Oh my goodness. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I pretty much fell asleep in about the fourth quarter. So, goodness. But we will definitely be diving into it. And we're opening up our phone lines early today. And we are encouraging all of you out there to call in and give your thoughts on just the complete dominance of the Seattle Seahawks rolling to a 43-8 win over the Denver Broncos. And you know what? I want to encourage you all out there to call in. And I'm really interested to hear your take on what you think Peyton Manning's legacy now is. Because Peyton Manning has known to take criticism over his football career on not being able to pull out and get the W in the big games. And certainly yesterday was a huge game. It's the Super Bowl, and did not get the job done. The entire team didn't get the job done, so I don't want to put it all on Peyton Manning's shoulders. But 517-355-9527, call in and give your thoughts on what you now think Peyton Manning's legacy is. He is certainly a classy individual. It's a funny story. You know, I was on my drive to work today listening to the radio, and they had Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman was on ESPN Radio. And Richard Sherman, you know, he's a guy, if you remember throughout this week, he called out Peyton Manning saying that Peyton Manning throws ducks. And ducks are lame passes, if you will. And, you know, he called out Peyton, and Peyton took a jab back at him and said, hey, at least I'm throwing touchdown ducks. And, you know, it was pretty interesting banter back and forth. But it is definitely clear after hearing Richard Sherman this morning that these two have a profound respect for one another. Richard Sherman, of course, he went out with an ankle sprain and finished the Super Bowl on crutches. I mean, it's not like they needed him. It's, again, 43-8, folks. But anyway, on his way to the press conference, Richard Sherman is about to limp up the stairs to the mic, and Peyton Manning comes out of nowhere, taps him on the shoulder and says, hey, how you doing? How you feeling? Now, if that isn't classy, I don't know what is, folks. You know, especially Peyton, I mean, a guy who, I mean, they just got totally demolished in the Super Bowl, and Peyton Manning, the class act that he is, you know, finds in his heart to go up to Richard Sherman and to ask, how is he doing? How is the injury feeling and whatnot? That's the definition of class act. No question. He's a class act and will definitely go down in my list, at least, as one of the top five QBs of all time. But I want to know your thoughts on it. What is Peyton Manning's legacy now as he fails to seal the deal in another big game? Matt and Alex, we're going to kick off the show today and really dive into the Super Bowl, guys. How's that sound? Right off the top of the hour, it's what everyone is talking about, a complete beatdown. You know what really nailed for me watching that game? It started off bad, as you talked about, Alex, before the show. Of course, with that safety. Starts off with a safety, and Denver just didn't look like themselves from the get-go. And what really put the nail in the coffin for me, guys, had to be two plays, and I'm sure with you guys, too. Seattle's dominance was that, you know, that 69-yard interception return by Malcolm Smith, who became MVP of yesterday's Super Bowl win. That made it 22-0. And then Percy Harvin's just sensational 87-yard kickoff return to open the second half. At that point, I pretty much knew, yep, this game is over, and I really started paying attention to commercials at that point. So, guys, just overall takeaways from it, just to kick off the discussion.
Yeah, just dull. It was just dull. The ads were dull. The game was dull. Some of the coaches' interviews were dull. I thought Pete Carroll's interview was a little dull. Honestly, the whole thing was just plain. It was a plain Super Bowl. And the worst part about it, and Matt was right, he said the Seattle defense is going to lay Peyton Manning out. They're going to rush him on all ends. Former Lion Cliff Avril rushing him on all ends. That, for me, was the backbreaker, was seeing a former Lion succeed in the Super Bowl when so many Lions find their way elsewhere. I mean, we saw Paris Lennon on the other side. He didn't have – it could have been him too. But a former Lion succeeding to win a Super Bowl – that they, if they wanted to, if they wanted to lay the money, that they could have kept him, if I'm not mistaken.
So Cliff?
Cliff.
Yeah.
So that for me was the big storyline, was a dull Super Bowl, a former Lion, just shining.
Matt.
Yeah, it was just kind of a dud.
It was.
In all aspects. And like Alex said, the ads were dull.
The ads were terrible.
It was boring. It was just boring. It's tough to blame some of the ones that were in the third and fourth quarters just because it was tough to stay engaged in the game because it was already decided. And you said, it's Peyton Manning, classy of him to go up to Richard Sherman. I think it's easier to do it when you get blown out by 35 and the game really has been decided for 2.5 hours rather than if they had lost on a last-second interception where Peyton Manning really cements his legacy in one throw. I mean, that game was over the opening kickoff of the second half. Yeah. When Harvin scored, it was done. And any time Denver even started to build something, there'd be another turnover. The Demaryius Thomas fumble off the catch and, gets punched out going back to Seattle. I mean, the most exciting part of the game was probably Joe Namath's coat
and was sexy,
coin toss
wasn't it?
Combo.
Oh, yes.
He was just a little bit too excited.
And he was like, let's flip this thing right now, baby. Like, and they had to redo the whole coin toss.
Get this thing on. It was very funny. But, I mean, once it started, it was just, from the opening snap over his head, safety. It was just like you could tell Denver was out of sorts and they never righted the ship, which is surprising because they have the veteran leader, possibly best quarterback ever. I think that argument is out the window now.
Right. It's out the window now. He still makes my top five, I think, man.
He's up there for sure. He might be the greatest regular season quarterback.
Yeah.
But you can't have an 11-12 record in the playoffs and be
one and two in the Super Bowl now.
It just doesn't make sense.
Right, yeah. And you know what, guys? For me, the story of the game had to be, that Seattle Seahawks defense is so, so good. I mean, it has to rank up there among the best, guys. It was completely dominant. From the get-go, they were able to get pressure on Peyton Manning throughout the entire game. He just looked so uncomfortable in the pocket. And guys, really, to me, Peyton Manning looked old. I'll tell you that. He looked old in that game. He's a pocket quarterback. He doesn't use his feet to make anything happen, but he just looked just like he was just on his last leg that entire game to me. I don't know. That's the first time I've really been able to say that Peyton Manning, his age, he looked like his age in that game. And it was just really frustrating to see it because, I wanted to see a good game. You always want to see a good game in the Super Bowl, no matter who you're rooting for. No one wants to see a complete 43-8 route. You know what I mean? And this is the game's biggest stage. Everyone's tuned in. You got the commercials and all the hype and the halftime performances. Nobody wants to see a blowout when it comes to the game. And, that Seattle defense, though, you got to tip your hat off to them. It was something that's so interesting to me, guys, is the makeup of this Seattle Seahawks team in general. Out of that 53-man roster, 21 of the players on that roster are undrafted free agents. Are you kidding me? When I heard that, it's unbelievable to me. And if you look at the Seattle defense, they are comprised of guys who are mostly late-round picks, undrafted guys. Guys that play and have to, like a Richard Sherman type of guy, Malcolm Smith. Those are guys that they play with chips on their shoulders because no one expected them to be this good. That's what they are, blue-collar type guys. That's what that entire defense is made up of, and they play like that every single down, every single game. So impressive. Another key aspect to it, I thought Russell Wilson did a very, very – his decision-making, guys – was flawless that entire game. I thought he knew when to pick his spots here and there, when to put the ball on the ground and run it, which really frustrated Denver's defense. Now, granted, I said this coming into that game, they did not Denver they could not run on that Denver defense, and that's something that they completely shut down. No, Sean Moreno couldn't get it going at all that entire game. But looking at Russell Wilson, the way he managed that game was just superb. And then I said that if Seattle is going to pull out that win over Denver, I said that Marshawn Lynch would have to have a big game. I look like an idiot now because he didn't have to have a big game. He had 15 carries for just 39 yards. They didn't need him whatsoever. And a lot of that has to do with the defense creating points as well. Then you had Carvin's, Harvin's huge run back. Lynch didn't really have to do anything, to be honest with you. And Wilson, again, he had no turnovers, decision-making through the roof. and again in the Super Bowl, it just proves I should have stuck with my gut, because in the end, in Super Bowls, guys, defense wins championships. Point blank, period. This is the fourth time in the Super Bowl era that the league's number one offense has scored 14 points or fewer. If that doesn't tell you the story right there, I don't know what does. Defenses come up on the biggest stage, and it matters most in those big moments. It was unbelievable. You know, it was really unbelievable to see Seattle just impose their will, because, guys, I chose Seattle to win the thing, and I changed my mind on Friday. I chose Seattle to win the thing before the playoffs started because of that superb defense. And, you know, I should have stuck with my gut. I tell you that, because they are truly unbelievable. I think it's that chip on the shoulder mentality that is so admirable, because I couldn't believe that. When I heard 21 of the 53 player roster is undrafted free agents, that's mind-boggling. You don't see that kind of thing. These are not guys that are chosen in the first round. These are not, you know, the top rival guys, you know, coming out of high school. These are guys that play the game just with a ruthless fierceness to them, and play with a chip on their shoulder like they got something to prove every single down. And that's something you have to really just give. And hats off to Pete Carroll, who now is a highly acclaimed college coach, who now comes in the NFL and, you know, has success and is now a Super Bowl winning coach. I mean, maybe Nick Saban should change his mind and maybe give a run at the NFL. I don't know.
I mean, it's not like it was Carroll's first time in the NFL.
Exactly.
I mean,
right.
The times before, he wasn't quite as successful, obviously, and now he's, you know, on top of the mountain. But for me, it's just when you look at Seattle's defense, every level completely dominated the Broncos. I mean, the defensive line won the battle in the trenches just going away. I mean, the pressure from the edges with guys like Cliff Avril and in addition to that, they were just pushed. There was no, I mean, you say they got Peyton Manning to be uncomfortable in the pocket. It's tough to say there even was a pocket because it was constantly collapsing.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I don't know how many times he would try and step up in the pocket and somebody would get a hand up and hit his arm as he was throwing it. And, I mean, that's what happened on the interception, a couple of the interceptions. I mean, it's just like he could not step up and make a throw. And every DB back there was as good or better than the guy they were covering. Demaryius Thomas was the only Bronco who did anything, and he fumbled. I mean, it was
nobody else
was open.
And we saw that, you know, that how the physicality of Seattle, we saw that very, very early. If you remember that, like the first series for Denver, you know, Demaryius Thomas tries to go, you know, through the middle and just gets popped.
Chancellor puts him on his butt.
Just puts him on the ground. And I'm sitting there like, okay. That send a message, if anything, that you're not just going to come across the middle. And it was just that move throughout the entire game that Seattle was just imposing their will physically. And Denver seemed to, you know, just kind of just curl up in a ball and just kind of fade away throughout the entire game. And it was really, really remarkable to see that, though, guys. But again, we're gonna open up our phone lines throughout the entire show. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on yesterday's Super Bowl game, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls throughout this entire hour. And in the meantime, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He is a Princeton University graduate and entrepreneur, Kyle Hagel. He enters his sixth year of professional hockey as a member of the Portland Pirates of the American Hockey League. After earning a degree in politics, Hagel turned professional in 2008. He has since been a driving force behind two hockey-centered ventures that are pretty, pretty cool and admirable, which are we're going to dive into them in just a sec. Kyle, thanks so much for joining me today. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Now, Kyle, the first venture, if you will, that I want to dive into is something called Schnarped, which is a pretty cool social media app idea that has really taken off. For those out there who have no idea what Schnarped is, can you just kind of give us a rundown on what it is, Kyle?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess it connects fans to pro hockey players is our tagline. And on top of that, what it does is it combines everything that you need to know in the hockey world and puts it all in one spot. Like, you know, we've found this problem where every night after hockey games, better to check, you know, up on your buddies and guys who are playing in different leagues around North America, you'd have to go to, you know, AHL.com, NHL.com, HockeyDB, CapGeek, HockeyFights.com in order to see everything. And we kind of took all those and put it in one spot. And it's also interactive because a bunch of players use it, and then fans and players can, you know, message each other.
That is really cool. That one-on-one interaction with players is pretty cool. Now, what separates, other than the one-on-one interaction with players, what separates Schnarp from other hockey applications out there, Kyle? What separates Schnarp from other hockey apps?
I guess it's the interaction with the players. I mean, I guess that's it in a nutshell. I mean, there's other good fantasy apps out there, like the Score app or like Yahoo Sports or whatever, but in those you can't really congratulate a player for a job well done on the ice, and the player's not going to see that. And on ours, we've got over 700 pro players and prospects verified, including about 100 guys who've played at least one game in the NHL this year, including, you know, several household names. Like, I know that for the Red Wings, like the Kaisers, a verified player. We've also got some other good big name players like Jonathan Taves, Max Pacioretty, among others. So that's really the selling feature for fans to get involved.
That is pretty cool. And you know, when fans who have the Schnarp app, when they, you know, do message a player, you know, good game or whatever, I mean, do most of the players respond back?
I would say that about 50% of them would respond back. But if the player is verified, then you would know that, like, these messages are coming through into his app. And we know that the players are the most active users on it. Like, the players, like, we have some guys who log in, like, 5-6 times a day. Like, I know when our app had only been live for 200 days,
right,
we had certain players who were logged in, like, 600-700 times already. So, you know, I can't speak for them and say, like, all these messages are getting read, but, I mean, the one thing that we can be proud of is that since our app has taken off, which has started taking off in about November, more hockey fans have received messages from hockey players on Schnarp than they have on Twitter.
Wow, that is unbelievable. That's a hockey fan's dream right there, Kyle.
Yeah. Now, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Now, it's really cool because you and your partner, Dustin Sprout, actually pitched this idea on the show Dragon's Den, which is the Canadian version of Shark Tank. If you guys haven't seen Shark Tank, it features entrepreneurs pitching their business ideas in order to secure, investment, you know, finance from a panel of capitalists, to be honest with you. So it's, you know, it's a very, very cool show. Now, the episode of you two is on YouTube right now for people to check it out. How did you guys get involved with the show and get that opportunity to pitch the deal?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, Dustin just went and, like, auditioned and just did, like, a 2-minute audition. And they said, oh, yeah, we like you. If you guys want to come to Toronto and pitch in front of the Dragons, we'd love to have you. So I was still playing hockey because, I mean, like, hockey is still my full-time job, and Dustin works on Schnarp full-time. Mm-hmm. And it happened that our screening date was right after my season ended last year. So he was like, hey, can you come to Toronto and film this with me? And I said, sure. So, you know, he flew in from Vancouver, and we practiced a lot and went on the show, and it's helped us out a lot. I mean, that's really gotten our product out there. And we were fortunate to have one of the best, like, results in the history of that show where, I mean, those Dragons, they're pretty stingy generally. Like, they don't want to give you, like, the money that you ask for, and they really grill you on your strategy. But,
right,
I mean, we were pretty prepared, did a good job, and we hooked all five of them in to want to work with us.
Yeah, you guys did a very, very good job. In fact, to start the pitch, you guys actually brought in a bunch of hockey gear and had them dress up just to get the mood right?
Exactly, man.
That is really, really cool stuff. How nervous were you doing that whole pitch?
It is pretty nervous, like, pretty nerve-wracking. Like, for anyone who's seen Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, like, they only show about 6 minutes. Like, the episode, like, your portion of the episode is 6 minutes, but when you're there under the lights, you're talking for an hour.
That was an hour pitch with them? Wow.
Yeah, and they're, like, grilling you the whole time. Like, how are you different than Twitter? What's separating you? The same way you were grilling me right at the start of the show. You know?
Oh, I wasn't grilling. That was lollipops and giggles compared to the Dragons. Come on, baby.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. But I mean, they are giving it to you, and you're under the bright lights, so it's kind of hot. But, it was a great time, man. And, you know, just in... It was pretty cool. I got a lot of messages, you know, sort of Dustin, from people we hadn't heard of, hadn't heard from before. Like, you start getting, like, messages, like, from out of the blue, from people you'd never even think to hear of. Like I got, like, Brett Hall's publicist called me. I was Whoa. Like, hey, yeah, like, listen, like, is there any way that Brett could, like, get involved to, like, work with you guys? Like, weird stuff like that. Like, there's a whole handful of them.
Right.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That is very, very cool stuff. Now, Kyle, what sparked the whole Schnarped idea? I mean, were you and Dustin just sitting around and saying, hey, did Dustin have an idea and you guys just went with it? How did that whole thing come about?
It actually grew out of a charity that we started together. And we started a charity called Hockey Players for Kids when we both started playing professionally in 2008, sorry. And in building this charity up from scratch, like, we learned that people in the communities where we're playing hockey, like, badly want to connect with players, but the channels to in which to do it are just broken. Like, you come to a new city, like, you kind of want to get involved as a player in your community, but then when people, fans, start adding you on Facebook, it's kind of awkward. You don't really want to accept them or really type, like, write back to them because it's a little too personal.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter, like, a lot of guys don't do it because it's too negative. So we tried to find the right channel, and we think that Schnarped is a more effective way for local sports celebrity to hundreds of fans relationship. We think works better through our platform.
Yeah, so true. Now, how is the app doing right now? Are you guys rolling in the dough right now, just swimming in millions right now, Kyle?
I wouldn't say we're rolling in the dough, my man. I'm still driving a beat-up Mazda 3 with a 7-year financing plan. So not quite, but you know, we don't really look at, you know, with social media companies, you can't really look at the dollar figure, especially right at the start. You have other metrics for success. And our metrics are, like, our downloads, which are over 60,000 downloads now. And just, like, the interactivity on the app and how often people are coming back to it, like, how sticky it is, how often people use it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's sticky, and it's especially sticky amongst players. Like, I mean, I'm still playing, and I can't tell you, like, how many guys have come up to me on the ice this year, like, at face-offs and said, like, hey, man, like, congrats on Schnarped.
Oh, are you serious? And, before the game?
Yeah, like, all the time. And I'm kind of like a guy who, you know, I'm a little bit of a chippy player. Like, I'm not normally someone who someone would try and be nice to.
Right.
And they're coming up to me saying, like, hey, man, like, I saw that. Like, that was sweet. I'm like, all right.
What do you say back? Are you like, all right, get away from me. We got a game to play.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, tell your buddies.
That is hilarious stuff, Kyle. Oh, my goodness. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Kyle Hagel. He is entering his sixth year of professional hockey as a member of the Portland Pirates of the American Hockey League, and has some two very, very cool ventures that he is currently embarking on. Now, I got to ask you, Kyle, another one of those ventures that you just alluded to is HP4K, Hockey Players for Kids, which is a really cool initiative, a nonprofit organization made up of hockey players around the world who are dedicated to positively impacting the communities they live in. Gotta love that. How humbling is it for you, Kyle, to be a part of that organization? And again, how did that start, and how'd you get involved?
Yeah, I mean, we got started just by realizing that guys, when they're playing pro hockey, have got a ton of spare time on their hands, and a lot of them are really great guys who, you know, would otherwise probably spend their day playing Xbox or not doing very much. So what Hockey Players for Kids does is finds, like, really, really easy ways for guys to get involved in their communities. So we put together, like, a template of how to run a reading program at a local school. And it's just, like, a 10-step process that we can kind of hold the guy's hand through to, like, hey, here's how you get a meeting with the principal. Here's how you get things started. Here's, like, what you'd have to say in a kickoff assembly. This kicks off the competition, then you play ball hockey with the kids at the end of the reading competition.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
This, like, stick to reading thing, it seems to be the number one way that players like to get involved, because it's, like, so easy. And then at the end of the 6-week competition that the kids do, where they pretty much compete amongst each other in the school, so you can read the most books. Kids who read the most books get to play in a ball hockey game against members of their local hockey team. And it's super easy for the player to do, and at the end of 6 weeks, it feels like you've accomplished a lot, even though it probably only took about 3 actual hours of your time to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the overall trajectory of it you know, it looks like you accomplished a lot. Like, you set this thing up. You went in and checked on the kids, see how they're doing. Played ball hockey with them. Teachers are happy. The literacy board's happy. Principal loves you. Your team's pumped because you're in the community. And then it feels good. It's just a good, positive way for guys to get involved. And I enjoy doing it. And the thing is with hockey players especially, is they come from strong communities for the most part. Like, these guys, they come from a place where, like, you know, they've had to get rides with other parents, or they've had to rely on other members of their community in order to get them where they are in their career.
Right.
So they're happy to give back.
Oh, that's great stuff, Kyle. And how many players are currently involved with HP4K?
Oh, there's I'd say like about 150, I think, active members at this point.
That is great.
And those guys, and then like of the 150 members who are involved, like, they're consistently, like, dragging other guys into the fire, right? So if like, I'm only active member technically of the Portland Pirates, but I've brought 10, 11 different guys on my team with me to do HP4K events this year.
That is great, great stuff. Now, Kyle, I mean, how important is it for you to give back? And, you know, where did your love for philanthropic endeavors like this stem from?
I don't know. Probably just, I don't know. It feels like the right thing to do. I mean, I've played in some cities in the U.S. where there's really not a lot going on for student kids. Like, when I was in Rockford, Illinois, and Peoria, Illinois, like, you go and play ball hockey with some kids at like an inner city school, and that's like literally like the best thing that's happened to them probably all month. And it just seems like it's so little of a commitment for us to make like a big difference. And I don't know, selfishly too, it feels good. I know that shouldn't be the number one motivation to do these things. It should be like this grand altruistic goal. But selfishly, I mean, you feel like karma's on your side. You feel like you did the world a solid, you know?
That is great stuff, Kyle. All right. Well, let's shift gears really quickly before I let you go. Again, you're with the Portland Pirates in the AHL. Kyle, how's your season going so far?
We are in the belly of the beast right now, my man. We just lost 3 games in a row this weekend and gave up 21 goals against.
Oh, boy.
So we are searching for answers at this point. But before this weekend, it was going not so bad. It was going pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing all right. We're doing okay. I think that we'll get the ship turned around on the right course.
Oh boy, hopefully so. And I understand also that your younger brother Mark, he currently plays for your hometown team, right? The Hamilton Bulldogs. I mean, how cool is that, having your brother in the same league as you?
Well, it is pretty cool. He's actually playing with, he played against the Bulldogs there last week, but he actually plays for the Iowa Wild, the Minnesota Wild farm team. And it's awesome. I got to play against him a couple times last year when he just signed like an amateur tryout contract just out of college. And he's a great player, and I'm really proud of him. And he's had to start at the bottom, like where I started too, which is in the East Coast League, which is before, you know, it's beneath the American League. And if, when you're down in the East Coast League, I mean, it sucks. You're not making very much money. You know, you're eating, you know, just the garbage, like peanut butter and jam for toast for breakfast all the time.
Cause yeah.
You know, you got 6 guys trying to pile in a 5-seat car to get to rinks and stuff because it sucks. And then you got to fight your way out of that league. And, you know, Mark did, and I'm happy that he's carving out a good living for himself with Minnesota's organization.
Wow, definitely. That's the grind right there, I tell you. Now, you know, Kyle, definitely, you know, I got to ask you, when you guys go at each other and play against each other, I mean, it's no holds bar, right? And who's the better player?
Mark is definitely the better player.
Is he?
He's a better skater, and he's a better better offensively. But if he went into a corner with me, I think that he'd probably be the one who ended up on the ice.
There you have that. Oh, gotta love that. All right, well, there you have it. Kyle Hagel, American Hockey League player and founder of Schnarped, and also HP4K. Great initiative. Kyle, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, no problem, Al. Thanks for having me, man.
No problem, no problem. All right, guys, well, let's take a break really quick. When we come back, we're going to dive also into MSU and Georgetown. MSU trying to shake off a loss to Georgetown. Of course, they were in the Garden on Saturday, and they lost to Georgetown. We're going to dive into that game. And also, again, we're opening up our phone lines throughout this entire hour and want to get your calls on the Super Bowl from last night. And also, what do you think Peyton Manning's legacy is now? Again, just can't win the big ones, folks. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, we're opening up our phone lines throughout this entire hour. We have about a half hour left in the show now. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We're encouraging all of you to call in and give your thoughts on anything. But, of course, we want to hone in on the Super Bowl. Again, a 43-8 win for the Seattle Seahawks as they are your Super Bowl champs as they topped the Denver Broncos last night. Again, 517-355-9527. Before we move on in the show, let's get to our current sports quick hit headliners for your Monday, February 3rd, 2014. Okay, MSU and Purdue, they were in action yesterday, the women's basketball team. They picked up its third victory over a ranked team yesterday afternoon, knocking off Purdue 89-73 at the Breslin Center. MSU utilized a balanced and efficient offensive effort. Five Spartans scored in double figures, and the team shot 50% from the field. They were hot. The Spartans remain alone in second place in the Big Ten at 7-2, while the Boilermakers fall to 15-7 overall, 5-5 in conference play. And Current Sports, we were definitely there yesterday, and it was a very scary moment for K.K. Hauser, Purdue's star point guard, as she went down in writhing pain, a knee injury. You could hear a pin drop when that moment occurred yesterday. And we're trying to hear a report this afternoon on whether or not it is definitely a torn ACL or MCL. So we'll if we can get to that, we'll get to that later on in the show if there is an update on that. Also want to note that redshirt freshman Ariel Powers, she led the attack with her 6 double-double, posting 19 points and 11 rebounds while also tying her season high with 5 assists. Georgetown, they topped Michigan State on Saturday at Madison Square Garden, 64-60. The final of that one, Gary Harris led the Spartans with 20 points. Michigan State finished 21-53 from the field and was 9-29 from behind the arc. The Spartans return home to play Penn State this Thursday at the Breslin Center. Led by Yogi Ferrell's 27 points in lockdown defense, the Indiana Hoosiers ended any hopes of an undefeated Big Ten season for the Michigan Wolverines with a 63-52 win Sunday afternoon. Ferrell held Nick Stauskas to 6 points on just 1-for-6 shooting while pouring in 27 points on just 10 shots, including 7-for-8 from the three-point line. Now, the red-hot Wolverines cooled off against the stingy Hoosier defense, shooting a pedestrian 40% and just 23% on three-pointers. Now, the loss moves U of M into a tie with Michigan State atop the Big Ten standings. Also note that Oakland University's Travis Bader broke J.J. Redick's NCAA Division I record for the most career three-pointers on Sunday in an 86-64 win over Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Now, the Okemos High grad went 5-for-7 from distance, pushing his career total to a staggering, get this, 461 made threes. Redick held the previous record at 457. Now, Bader's record garnered a standing ovation from the crowd and earned him a nice compliment from Coach Greg Campy, saying, quote, "You've got a guy sitting in the room that's the greatest of all time at something." And we're not talking about flipping a tiddlywink. What is it? I don't know what a tiddlywink is, but or something like that. Yeah, yeah. And this game's been played for a long, long time, and he's the best ever, and he's still got seven to 8 games left. Gotta love that. Travis Bader, man, he's a great player. All right, the Red Wings will try to gain some momentum heading into the Olympic break with 3 games this week, starting with tonight's home matchup versus the Vancouver Canucks. The Wings lost 6-5 in OT to the Capitals last night. The Wings currently in a 3-way tie for 8th place in the Eastern Conference. Will head to Florida after tonight's game to take on the Panthers and Lightning before the Olympic break. The Detroit Pistons travel down to South Beach tonight to face the Miami Heat. Miami has been shooting 54% over its last 5 games. Tip-off is 7:30 p.m. as the Pistons try to hand Miami their second home loss of the season. I also want to note that St. John's wrestling team, they dominated the CAAC Red title this weekend with a combined point total of 318 and 8 weight classes won. Hats off to them. And you know that little bet that Floyd Mayweather had, the $10.4 million bet? Well, rumors were certainly floating about that one, but folks, it ends up that the bet was never made, folks. Rumors, again, a $10.4 million bet on the Broncos was what said that that Mayweather put his money down on, but he says no, that bet never happened. So I don't know if he's trying to save face or if the bet really did happen. So those are your current sports quick hit headliners for today. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Again, you can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. But guys, before we hit our second break, really quickly, MSU and Georgetown, that game Saturday at Madison Square Garden. MSU falling in that one. Guys, you guys just heard the stat. Way too many jump shots and three-pointers. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, they were just throwing up anything, guys. And this team is certainly beaten up. We saw that. Definitely catch up with them, I think, in that game. Gary Harris was Gary Harris. I mean, Gary Harris is so good. At times, again, he tries to carry this team on his back so many times. Again, he tried to do that on Saturday, but somebody else needed to step up, and that simply did not happen. It's just really disappointing to see that, guys. I'm still waiting on somebody offensively to help Gary out with the scoring. Because, I mean, remember that? Did you guys see that step back three? I also want to note that step back three that he had. I think it was in the second half. I mean, that was an NBA. He's NBA ready right now, guys. Gary Harris is Gary Harris. The inside presence for MSU, they were definitely missing Brandon Dawson and Adrian Payne on Saturday as they got out-rebounded in that one to Georgetown. It was just a really just sloppy game for MSU, and they just seemed to just be reaching for any type of production offensively other than Harris.
But you also have to remember, Al, that Georgetown had some troubles of their own too. I mean, Joshua Smith out for academic reasons. He was poised to be their main big man. And then Ayegba was out that Monday when they faced Villanova. So it's not like Michigan State's the lone wolf here when it comes to injury-prone problems. Georgetown also has dealt with injury problems themselves. So
yeah, but this is an unranked Georgetown team. You got to get
but
that W.
This is a Georgetown team that's not lackluster. This is a Georgetown team that's
no, they are.
You look at rebounding. This is a bigger, more physical
Alex,
team.
They went on a 4-game losing streak coming into this one against MSU. I think three
Al,
or four game. There
have been
streak.
Great teams that
Alex,
have had losing streaks.
You have to win against a Georgetown team who hasn't won in Lord knows when, and you're playing in the best kind in the Big Ten. I mean, you've had some big wins this season without Adrian Payne and Brandon Dawson. They were just sloppy.
They didn't have to win.
Sloppy.
They had,
and they looked.
They didn't
looked,
have Payne.
They were a battered team in that game. Battered team. Getting out-rebounded, I mean, Costello did what he could early in that game. He held his own. But in the end, they got out-rebounded. They got bullied down low. And that, for me, again, somebody has got to step up other than Gary here. I keep harping on that because he's carrying this. He's carried this team multiple times down the stretch in games. He tried to pull off his Superman act on Saturday, and it simply just it ran out. They ran out of gas.
No, someone has to step up when Keith Appling's wrist gets better.
You got
to
get that. Bottom line, though, you got to win against a Georgetown team like that.
No, Michigan State had injuries. How are they supposed
to
win?
That's not an excuse. They've had injuries these past few games, but still, I mean, they've pulled out W's without Brandon Dawson, and Adrian Payne. You think that against an unranked Georgetown team, you would and a not a. I don't think Georgetown is a great team by all means.
They're a tournament team.
They have great guards.
They're a tournament team.
That. Unranked Georgetown team, you got to get that W. You got they have to be more. Somebody else has got to step
Matt,
up.
Matt,
I mean, they have to step up. And you look at Costello, Gonna, Schilling combined for 3 rebounds.
That's exactly.
That's pathetic.
That's pathetic. Inexcusable.
With Payne and Dawson out, the lack of athleticism in the bigs is jarring. It's worrisome because, you know, you have guys who there's no one to protect the rim. So as soon as the perimeter guys get beat, there's no help coming from the back line to kind of help them out and you know, get some rim protection, make some rotations. They just looked lazy. They looked lethargic. Offensively, there was no attacking a zone. They just swing the ball around, yes, and then take a contested three. Attack the zone. Drive the ball. Try and get somebody
zone,
open.
Which they ran a 2-3 zone. They switched up from 3-2 to 2-3 the entire game. Nobody wanted to attack. I mean, there was a moment where Keith tried to, but he got put on his butt about 2 or 3 times. Gary Harris, he attacked the zone a few times himself. His jump shot was ringing, so he tried to force a few shots down the stretch as well. But, again, attack it. I mean, guys were just throwing up just crap left and right, and I'm sitting there like, oh, once they started getting in that mindset of just throwing crap up, I'm like, this game is over.
Guys, looking at this unbiasedly, when they attack the zone, Georgetown is just a big physical team. Can we agree on that? I just think that Georgetown, you can't count them out. Although, yeah, they're an unranked team. Yeah, Michigan State has their—
I'm giving credit to Georgetown. The key for me for Georgetown, their guards were outstanding. Georgetown's guards had a very, very good game, especially Starks. Starks needed shots when he needed to. He attacked the paint when he needed to. They got out in transition, which is another thing that surprised me because Michigan State is usually a very good transition defense team. Starks was able, and other players were able to get out in transition, get easy buckets on the break, something that you haven't seen all year really from MSU.
Nate Lubick as
well. I would give the Georgetown guards more credit than I would the inside presence. I mean, you just saw laziness from guys on the inside for MSU.
I agree there was laziness, but the Georgetown guards also played great defense. And when they did try penetrating the zone, I think they had tons of steals that game, Georgetown, but also, that was lack of carelessness from some of the players from Michigan State. You know, there are some turnovers left and right coming from Valentine and some of the forwards. So, I see that side of it too. But I do think, though, that this Georgetown team isn't just a cakewalk. I think this is a team that actually could legitimately compete with some bigger programs.
I mean, they're far from a cakewalk, but at the same time, this is a top 10 team in America. Regardless of injuries, they should be bringing a stronger effort game in and game out. And I know they're drained, obviously, and I think they're going to appreciate, you know, the break until Thursday till they have to play again. But it just seemed like they weren't engaged. I mean,
not at all.
I'm not going to say they were going to, you know, Denver Broncos level of apathy, but it was, you know, it was kind of getting to that slippery slope. And when you have guys who are out, like Dawson and Payne, you need everybody to step up and at least be solid.
Right. And it comes down to the little things because, again, another thing I'm harping on, free throws.
Terrible.
I mean, they were terrible from the line that game. What was it? 9 for 16 from the free throw line.
And it's the guys who you want at the line.
Right.
I mean, Harris
exactly.
Missing free throws. Appling missing free throws.
Appling, yes.
I mean,
key guy.
That's something that if they don't address it soon, it's going to come back to bite them in the tournament because that's something that stays with you and will haunt you later. But, you know, when you have these guys out, you need a Travis Trice to be there every game, not every other game. I mean, mm-hmm. He's alternating games of 0 points, 10 points, 3 points, 10 points, 0 points. It's
right.
like you need a more consistent effort from your role players mm-hmm. if you want to be successful. If you want to tread water right now, those guys need to perform every time out on the floor, and they're just not getting that production.
Right. I totally agree. And it looks as though Adrian Payne, knock on wood, will be ready for this week against Penn State. So, all right, well, let's hit the second break. When you come back, we will get to hear a sit-down I did with a local athletic director, Greg Malik, the Lancer Community College athletic director. We didn't get a chance to play that on Friday's show. We had a book show, but we'll play it for you today. So don't go anywhere. Current sports returns in just a sec.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, if you didn't get a chance to catch Current Sports, the latest Current Sports TV episode, I sat down with Greg Malik. He is the athletic director for Lansing Community College, and he had some pretty interesting takes on athletic directing from a local perspective. Check this out.
Appreciate it. Now, you know, something very interesting that a lot of people don't know is that you are actually a high school boys basketball coach, or assistant coach, I should say, at Saginaw Arthur Hill from 2000 to 2007. And you actually beat a certain mid-Michigan team around here in 2006 to win the state championship. Talk about who that was. Who was that school?
You know, I've been fortunate enough to coach a lot of good kids, especially at the high school level, and we were fortunate enough in double overtime to beat Okemos for the state championship in the Breslin Center.
So, wow, how was that moment? Double overtime, what a game!
You know, for me, it was obviously unbelievable from just the standpoint to be able to stand back and just watch the kids enjoy it. I mean, that's always what it's about for me, is seeing the enjoyment they get, the memories that they'll have for the rest of their lives, and you know, be able to talk to their families and their kids and grandkids. That's the most satisfaction that I get out of those types of moments. So,
now, Greg, I ask you, because you were, you know, like I said, you were coaching boys basketball.
Yep.
How did you make that transition from boys basketball coaching to an athletic director?
One of the things that I was able to do when I was at Arthur Hill is, as an assistant coach, I kind of had the administrative duties. We had a couple summers, the Arthur Hill Classic Shootout, Lumberjack Shootout, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. where we brought in a lot of the better programs from the state in late June, early July, got the event certified with the NCAA, so the Tom Izzos, you know, the Creens, the Beelines, all of those coaches could come in and watch the games legally. And I learned so much from that experience of just the administrative side of it that clicked that light bulb on for me, saying, you know, this is something I'd like to do. So that's kind of where I got my start. Owe that all to Greg McMath to allow me to do that. You know, who's the head coach at Arthur Hill currently, and that's kind of where it began.
How was the adjustment period when you start to, you know, get your feet wet in the profession of athletic director? I mean, what'd you have to adjust to?
I was also very fortunate again. My first athletic director job was at Delta College.
Right.
And the current and resigning athletic director was still employed there. So the learning curve was huge, so to speak, because anytime I had a question, he was there.
Exactly.
You know, so the transition I was very fortunate. It was very easy for me.
Looking at the position of athletic directing now, and you know, we had Mark Hollis on not too long ago, and you know, Mark Hollis is the athletic director for Michigan State University, and he talked about how the position has really, really evolved over the years. I mean, it's become political in many regards. I mean, you have to deal with, you know, so many things. I mean, talk about that evolution over the years and what you deal with today.
From a community college standpoint, at my level, there hasn't been as much evolution, so to speak, mm-hmm. in my perspective, especially with Mark Hollison here at Michigan State and the other Big Ten universities. It's a business. You know, you have to have so many different departments. I think they're probably, and I'm just guessing, I would think the administration and athletic staff and the athletic department here is probably in a couple hundreds.
Right.
You know, for me at LCC, it's two.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. Big difference.
And that's not involving the coaches. I've got, you know, 10, 12 with assistant coaches, up to 15 coaches on staff. All of them, except for my men's head basketball coach, are part-time. But as far as the administrative side of the house, it's myself and one administrative assistant. So the evolution of it was, we're still very much grassroots at my level. A lot of the athletic directors at our level still coach a sport, sometimes two. I'm fortunate enough to where I don't have to do that. I'd probably be divorced if I did.
So too much work.
Yeah, it is. It is. It still takes you away from home. You know, I'm there for every home athletic event. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the one who always receives every single phone call from a concerned parent, concerned citizen, concerned coach, concerned student athlete. There aren't a lot of layers of filters for anything that transpires within our program. I know it all. I see it all. I'm involved in it all, which is great. Because I love it, because I am a hands-on kind of guy, but it can be a little overwhelming at times.
So what would you say are those pinpoint differences between, you know, a big university in the position of athletic director compared to Lansing Community College, if you will?
all I can do is tell you my perspective of what I do, because right. I've never been involved with a Michigan State's types of programs. My perspective on it is I kind of already hit on it a little bit, is that grassroots. You have to be hands-on at my level. Mm-hmm. Not saying anybody else isn't, but I think they have a lot of people that help them with things. At my level, I don't have that. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Right. One of the things that I've been fortunate enough to do is when I went to Olivet as an assistant athletic director, we had 22 sports, varsity sports, 550 student athletes. So it was a large group of student athletes, and I saw where those layers were. But being a former coach, coming to LCC allowed me that hands-on again, and that's what I missed. Mm-hmm. So it was a good thing for me, and I love the level that I'm at. But I think the biggest difference is you mentioned a couple things, some of the political things that they got to handle. Mm-hmm. Athletes are a much higher profile, obviously, at the Division I NCAA level. We get a couple every now and then, because if we get some kids that are really talented locally, mm-hmm. from the local high schools, the Lansing Public School System, you know, Okemos, East Lansing, you know, Holt, right. and those things. So we can get a little bit of a higher profile kid if we have a couple of them come in, but obviously nothing to the level of Michigan State. So.
And you talk about those local, you know, athletes. You know, I want to talk about the recruiting war that you guys go through. You know, when you talk about, because you guys are in competition as far as getting athletes to your school.
Correct.
And with directly with MSU now, I mean, being right here in East Lansing, I mean, what is the recruiting war like, you know, when you talk about community college?
Yeah, our recruiting war is with other community colleges.
Okay.
You know, if a kid qualifies academically to participate and they have the gifts of the athletic talent to play at a Michigan State, game over, war's over. You know,
right? No competition.
And I don't blame them. You know, that's what they should do. We're here competing against other community colleges, and sometimes some of the smaller schools, the Division III schools, mm-hmm. Some of the Division II NCAA schools, because they might want to stay close to home to start out. Mm-hmm. They aren't comfortable going away. Economically, if we don't put them on a full athletic ride because they haven't quite developed athletically enough and they still think they can get a full ride at a four-year school, it saves them money. I mean, mm-hmm. we're $83 a credit hour. You know, I don't know what it is at Michigan State or any other schools in the area, but we're very affordable. It allows them to sit back, breathe a little bit, maybe mature a little bit more, and that's how we recruit. But any kid that doesn't or is talented, and we'll use men's basketball, it's a, you know, high-profile sport in both programs,
yeah.
My coach, Coach Ingram, he's out there. I think he recruits the young men that he knows can help his program. He doesn't care if they can go to a Michigan State. He doesn't care if they can go to
he recruits everybody.
He recruits
everybody. It does not matter. No holds barred.
You know, and he's been around, I think this is his 24th or 25th year coaching at LCC. He's very well known and respected in the community. So he's on it. He really, really is.
I definitely have to agree with you, because I tell you what, I am still in debt to this day when you talk about MSU, but that's another subject.
Sure.
Now, you know, Greg, you know, you talk about the competition, and if someone wants to go to a Division I college like an MSU, like you said, the game is done. I mean, that's a Division I college. You're in competition directly with those other community colleges. What's the competition like? Is it very competitive like it is with an MSU competing with a U of M for a kid?
If you have coaches like I have that love to compete and love to win, it's competitive. There are some institutions that at the community college level that they have athletic programs because they feel it's sometimes a necessary evil. At Lansing Community College, they fully support us. They want us to be competitive. They want us to have an administration and coaches that go out and get after it. Mm-hmm. So the coaches that I have, they go out and get after it. It's competitive. You know, they'll come into my office at times and be upset because Kellogg Community College got a baseball player that we wanted.
Right.
You know, or Mott Community College got a basketball player that we wanted.
Right.
You know, or Muskegon Community College, they got a strong softball program. They got a softball player that we wanted. So it's competitive. It is. And they enjoy it. You know, that's what keeps the fire going for a lot of the coaches. So
now, hitting real quick on athlete loyalty, if you will. Of course, you know, like a program like Izzo's MSU men's basketball program, he loves to recruit players that are going to stay 4 years and then possibly make the leap to the next level. Now, with you guys, I had to ask you before the show, and you told me something really, you know, opened my eyes, is that the goal is to get your athletes to a Division I college,
correct,
so to speak, right? I had no idea. It's not to keep them, you know, honed down at LCC.
Well, they can only compete for 2 years at our level anyway.
Right.
So they have 2 years based on And it's very complicated, the eligibility rules coming from a community college to a four-year school, specifically the Division I's. But yeah, it's our goal to get them an education, you know, either an associate's degree, a certificate, a macro stamp, or the transferable hours that they need to move on to a four-year school, be it a Division III, a Division II, Division I, ideally. But yeah, that's our main goal, get them the education, move them on, see them compete at a higher level. Because when they have that success, especially if they're local kids, which we really like to recruit local, they come home, they talk to their friends, their mom, their dad, their cousins, you know, and they talk about the experience they had at LCC. That helps us with recruiting.
And what's the success rate like with getting kids to that next level?
You know, it's all based on, obviously, again, academics and their athletic ability. I think we have a very good success rate. I think LCC has a lot of programs in place with our academic advisors, with our tutoring program that we have in place, with our study hall programs we have in place, and the student athlete orientation that we do every summer with our student athletes, laying out the plans. Our academic advisors sit with our student athletes and put together what they call an EDP, an educational development plan, based on what that student athlete's goals are. Is it to transfer to a four-year school? Is it to play 2 years at LCC, get an associate's degree, go into the workforce? But I think LCC does a phenomenal job helping those student athletes and students in general get to their goals.
Interesting stuff. That was Greg Malik, athletic director for Lansing Community College. Again, this week we have, in preparation for the Olympics, we will be sitting down. Well, I'll be sitting down with Mark Malkowee. He is the president of the Greater Lansing Curling Club. And I'm actually going to hit the ice tomorrow and give a shot at the sport of curling. Never done it before. This is going to be very, very interesting. But again, if you want to be a part of the live audience this Wednesday when I sit down with Mark, it's going to be a packed house. He's bringing a lot of people, especially from the club and, you know, his family and friends. But, you know, we want you to sign up on WKR.org. Seating is free. But again, it is very, very limited, especially this week. Go to WKR.org to be a part of the live studio audience for Wednesday night's taping. All right, guys, about 4 minutes left. What pick'ems do we got, Matt?
All righty, we got some college basketball. Football's over, guys. Mm-hmm. We gotta get used to this game.
We need a new system.
Gotta get into a new rhythm.
Is it singing? Yeah. Is it what is the losing?
We do, because the month finished, right?
Yep.
And it looks as though
Alex.
Oh, it is. It's not looking. It
Alex is.
Is
the winner.
He's really cocky right now.
Blue Moon. Oh
yeah,
man.
I had a Richard Sherman chip on my
Alex
shoulder.
Alex finishes with 22 points. Al and I tie with 19. Thanks to Bruno Mars not wearing a hat.
Right. Exactly.
And I decided to make NoSean Moreno inconclusive because there was no camera on him during the national anthem.
Oh, there was.
So there's no way to tell.
Oh, I wasn't even paying attention to it during that time.
All right, but let's move on. Okay. This week's picks. We're gonna start Tuesday night. Ohio State goes to Iowa. Who you got?
I'm going with Iowa on that one.
Yeah, they got lucky with that Wisconsin win. I'm gonna go with Iowa.
They did get lucky with that Wisconsin win. Would have been a terrible way to lose. Lenzel Smith Jr. missing an easy layup and then traveling by getting bumped by his own player, but. Wisconsin can't do anything in the final seconds. I'm going to take Iowa.
I think Ohio State just lack offense right now.
The
Big
Ten. Looking at the standings, it's shocking.
It is.
There are three teams that have less than five
losses. How about Nebraska? Right. How about Nebraska right now?
Northwestern.
In fourth.
Too. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's crazy. Crazy.
All right, next up. Penn State at Michigan State Thursday night.
Michigan State.
By how
AP
many?
Comes back. I'm going to say Michigan State by 8.
If you remember, Penn State beat Ohio State last week with that last-second shot.
They did.
Not hard to beat Ohio State these
days,
though.
Right, right. This is Michigan State, not Ohio State. Yeah. So, yep, Michigan State.
How many, Alex?
I'll say Michigan State by 11.
11. I have MSU by 8 as well. I wrote down before we even did this. So
beautiful.
Going to keep it. All right, into the NBA tonight. Pistons at the Heat.
Give me the Heat.
Heat. The Heat.
My heart almost spoke for me right there.
Yeah. Heat.
Alex.
Heat.
All around.
The Heat is on.
It's hot.
The Heat is on. All right. Wednesday night, Pistons at the Magic.
Pistons and Magic. Okay. Give me the Pistons.
Pistons.
All right.
Any more?
Couple NHL games. Quickly, Red Wings tonight versus the Canucks.
Wings.
Canucks.
Taking the Canucks. And then Thursday at the Panthers.
Panthers.
All right.
That's all we got. That's it. All right. Well, thanks so much for all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Thanks so much again. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing and WKR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic start to the work week and be easy, people.